Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 119. This is Steve Borsch, and my other hosts are Tim Elliott.
Yes, I'm here.
Graham Thickens.
Hello.
Phil Wilson.
Guten Tag.
And we are at the Minnesota High Tech Association, and we have the distinct pleasure to be talking with Margaret Anderson Kelleher, the president and CEO of MHTA. Welcome.
Yay.
Great to be with you guys.
So far, what have you thought of the event and how it's gone off, and did it meet your expectations?
Well, it's been fantastic today here at the Spring Conference. You know, I've been here as a participant in the past. I've done a couple panels, but to see the whole thing come together today, nearly 1,000 people here in attendance, and you know, we got started, kicked off with Robert Stevens, and that was,
oh my gosh,
you know, he's a brain rattler, right?
Yeah.
He gets you woken up. You don't need a cup of coffee. You just need to listen to Robert for a while, and then you're ready to go for the day. Governor Dayton stopped by, and I thought with a very good message, thanking people for choosing Minnesota and how do we work together to make more jobs in the tech industry here, which is really one of our main emphasis, is to be able to talk with companies that are existing and folks who have a desire to start businesses here in the state that are tech-based, and to really be quite concerned about the overall level of science and technology jobs in Minnesota and the workforce to fill them in the future.
Yeah. Well, we talk about that a lot, too, on our own, the level of tech savviness, which, frankly, when we started Minivate almost 3 years ago, we did it because there really wasn't a lot of conversation about what was going on in technology, and people weren't really aware of what was here and who was here and the kinds of things they were doing. And now there's just been an explosion in people that we've met and entrepreneurs that are doing really fascinating things, and they just have broadband connections, and they're building things in on hosted servers, and rolling out iPhone apps and Android apps, and there's an amazing amount of stuff going on in this market that I think would surprise a lot of people.
I think it's pretty exciting, and I think that the other observation I have is that by having groups like Minivate get going and talking about it, it really grows the ecosystem, the tech ecosystem. And you know, an ecosystem is richer when there's more going on in it. If you only have a couple of things happening, then that's not very interesting. But we have a lot of things happening. We have to make sure we're kind of rowing in the same direction, going for the same sorts of goals here. And I think the other piece of that that's quite important that you said that really resonates with what we're working on is, you know, we have to be able to grow these small companies that are getting started. And so part of that's about disrupting the supply chain of our largest companies here in Minnesota. You know, if they could do 1 or 2% spend on what they are spending in tech, in IT, in services around tech to be Minnesota-based, wow, what a difference that would make in helping keep these companies going, getting them up on their feet, letting them build brand, and have the ability to move forward. I think that's an important piece of this as well.
Let me ask you a little bit. When we had the pleasure of meeting at your welcome reception, I talked to you about, you know, what are your first orders of business, and you talked about, you know, really doing a quote-unquote SWOT analysis and doing some strategic planning for the organization. Have you had a chance to do that, and where do you see the organization moving as from where it was to where it's going? What are your goals?
This is a great question. We're about two-thirds the way through that process, and I think the great piece of it, you know, there's the important question that an organization, are we relevant still? And we are still relevant. We've gotten a lot of feedback. We're definitely relevant in this world. I think it's being able to really move that into the innovation space and maybe a little bit off of what 30 years ago was the High Tech Council or the Software Association, and broaden that out to a broader ecosystem of companies that see themselves in the science and technology space. And also keeping the piece of the mission that's around education, because that clearly is a differentiator between some of the other organizations out there. We care that there's good higher education in the state of Minnesota, a strong University of Minnesota, a good MinSCU system that is, you know, making sure that kids are getting the 2 and 4 year degrees they need to do the jobs that are available. And the other part is strengthening that K-12 system and making sure that kids have the awareness of what sorts of companies exist here in Minnesota that they could work for. So we're getting a lot of good feedback. We're looking at, you know, our existing programming, how can we make that richer? How can we partner with other organizations that are out there too? Mm-hmm. We don't need to do it all ourselves. There's other organizations that are doing things quite well themselves, but if we could partner up on the event or the speech or the, you know, piece that's being published, we may get a better reach out of those things. Mm-hmm. And so really looking at that as a model, more partnerships and also celebrating the work that others are doing too.
Well, you're obviously no stranger to the political system, and the goal of increasing innovative education in the state. How do we balance, and how can an association like the MHTA impact where we are in our education funding right now? We're struggling as a being able to fund simple things like, you know, whether it's fifth grade band or art classes in the public schools. How do we not only maintain those particular curriculum pieces and add more tech pieces to it? Mm-hmm. Can we do that, or does one have to be sacrificed to make the other happen?
Well, two things come to mind. First of all, I think the uniqueness of an organization like the Minnesota High Tech Association is the ability to translate for policymakers from the business community what is needed in the workforce of the future. And so what are those things? Those things are more like critical thinking skills, higher order thinking skills. And I think all of us sitting around this microphone stand would say that has a lot to do with science, technology, engineering, and math studies, because those are the disciplines that really help you with those problem solving and critical thinking skills. So we think that's one piece of it. We can translate back to the policymakers why it's so important to not be sort of slash and burn about what's happening. And assessment tools have their place in the world. Certainly measurement of making sure students are making adequate yearly growth, that they are pushing themselves and that they're getting that sort of data, and teachers have that sort of data back. But you know, it's not really useful to measure the third grade 5 years ago against the third grade today. It's kind of a meaningless piece of data. It's a meaningless data point in a lot of ways. What's important is that we are really doing more individualized assessment that helps the teacher and the student. So I think we can give them that message because we're all data people. Mm-hmm. We believe in the power of using data for the advancement of society, and I think that's an important piece. The second piece is in our work with the Minnesota High Tech Foundation and the ADC grant that we received at the end of last year, the $750,000, we're going to do three things. We're going to do more of the STEM summits that we did a couple of years ago. In fact, our first one will be in North Minneapolis. We're going to partner with the governor's office on this because we think this is an important place where students and parents need to understand what kind of opportunities are there. But, you know, as a parent of a 16-year-old and 13-year-old, I know it's really hard for kids to be in class day to day and understand, you know, why do I have to take 4 years of high level math? Why do I have to take 3 years of science? Well, here's why you should want to, because there are these cool jobs on the other end that are in applied mathematics or applied engineering, and this is what you can get to do. So we're partnering on things like that. We're increasing our scholarships and the number of our scholarships for students in higher education. But with that, we're also asking this very important question, which gets back to your main point. What makes a great business person who has a science and technology background? We're asking that question right now. We think GPA is important, but we think other things might be important too. Did they play a musical instrument? Were they involved in sports? Were their leadership capabilities, the ability to public speak? And so we're really looking for data around that, around the country, frankly, mm-hmm. and how do we incorporate that into what we're doing? And the third thing is a STEM marketing campaign aimed at students and parents.
Well, I got to jump in on the education piece.
Go ahead,
here,
jump in.
On
go
one
ahead,
thing.
Go ahead. Go
thank,
ahead.
Thank you, Phil. He's always so supportive. Since I haven't seen any models for this other than maybe Stanford to a degree, but I remember talking to Dick Summerstead, who used to run the front door to the university, about the sorts of things that were happening at the university and what was needed in the community. So I'll give you one example. you know, that Clay Shirky, who's an academic, has written books on crowdsourcing mm-hmm. and all the things that are happening now that the collective is connected with mm-hmm. mobile devices mm-hmm. and online and so forth, and it's really spanning a lot of ages. The one issue that I keep seeing come up again and again and again in terms of understanding, and it's not just kids and it's not just people who are in the education system being educated, but it's people running businesses mm-hmm. that don't have the time to go climb all these learning curves and figure everything out.
Right.
But what they would like you talking about interpreting for the legislature, what they would like is for cultural anthropologists from the University of Minnesota mm-hmm. to tell them about what's happening mm-hmm. globally mm-hmm. with shifts in connectivity and perception and ability to have information at people's fingertips instantly. What does that mean for your business?
Yeah.
You know, what? How are things shifting from a business standpoint? So, you know, when you take a look at software, because I used mm-hmm. to be in the enterprise content management mm-hmm. space, and I look at the companies that are embracing open source software mm-hmm. like Drupal and Joomla and WordPress and are doing really amazing things with free software.
Mm-hmm.
That would have cost, even 3-4 years ago, would have been
yes.
$150,000 just for the software, forget about the services.
Mm-hmm.
But most companies, especially because change is accelerating, they don't have the ability to have the level of awareness or the learning around that.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings up the question, how can MHTA
yes.
be a bridge between the thought leadership and the academic knowledge bases that exist right here in Minnesota
yes.
at our own institutions and not only startups and entrepreneurs, but the business community overall?
I think it's a great idea, and it's one of my personal things that I've been thinking about with MHTA is that I think there's an open space for a couple of things with what hasn't been happening. So one is the work of some research that can come forward that MHTA can bring together that's going to help in the translation to policymakers and others and just disseminate. But the other piece of that is, you know, we do member-only networking events. Maybe one of those member-only networking events once a year really needs to focus on what you're talking about, bringing the academic research into the business community mm-hmm. and being able to get people kind of firing up around, okay, so this is what's out on the horizon, or this is what's right beyond the horizon, and this is what we need to be thinking about. I think that's brilliant, and so I'm going to take you up on helping me think about that.
Yeah.
You just got yourself more work.
Yeah, there
that.
You go.
It was Graham's. It was
You're
Graham's.
Such a giver. Steve Bohr, she's such a giver.
One of the comments that Robert Stevens made this morning was challenging the community to mm-hmm. really adopt some of these non-conventional approaches to education.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your reaction, and do you think the association plays a role locally in putting up some storefronts and getting kids involved?
Well, I don't know if you were watching on Twitter, but I said back to, well, I said, I included Sophia, but then I also, when he said that, and I don't know if it was one of you guys that tweeted it, but I tweeted back to another company that said, we're interested in doing it. I said, we're interested in doing it too.
Hmm.
And so all of a sudden, you know, you have some critical mass around it. I think what we know now about how kids learn is that as many kids as there are different ways of learning. So for some kids, a traditional school with a traditional model is great, and they do really well in that. Other kids need more of an open or project-based model school, and they're going to do better than that in that sort of setting. Kids often also need informal learning. You know, I can just tell you from my own experience, there's no doubt about it. Growing up on a farm where I had to fix things and had the opportunity to go out and play with things that weren't really play, they were work, mm-hmm. but it seemed like play to me was an important part of being curious, of being able to be fairly mechanical and think about things in a different sort of way. That informal education, things like having that storefront where kids can kind of walk through the door and say, hey, I want to do this. That's a really cool concept. And I think what we have to do is we have to realize for every kid that's out there, there's probably some unique quirk to their style. How do we crowdsource this to the point where, you know, maybe it's Howard Gardner's models of learning that we look at around and say, you know, this is what we need to do. We need to build different sort of, you know, if you think in the engineering terms, redundancy around reinforcing how important science, technology, math, and engineering are in your life. And I think that's a really cool thing. I love what Sophia's doing. I think it's great. Yeah, when Robert talked about the Khan Academies, which great Khan Academy is great, but we have our own little version of that happening here with Sophia. And, you know, when you sit down with Don and you talk to Don about what's happening, I showed it to my kids right away. I got the beta password. And, you know, I think that that ability to go in and be in private, but be able to stop something and run it again. Stop something, run it again. Okay, I'm not quite getting it. Stop it, run it again. That's a really important deal. And I think that kids are under a lot of pressure to not disrupt and slow down. And, you know, I think there's something there that really makes sense for all the different ways we learn.
So what that brings up another thing. Sorry about just keep jumping in here. Because I see you want to ask a question, Graham.
I got
like, shut up, Steve.
Graham's doing his horse check.
We have some very interesting game companies here in the Twin Cities. Mobile 3D, there was a great iPad-based game that was shown by help me out here, I can't remember the name of the company. Anyway, but a fellow named Peter Tamty, who was in charge of Apple's gaming at one point, brought on by Steve Jobs, is here with Destineer, and they have a Maxsoft gaming group and all of that. There's a physicist professor at Northwestern who is all about gaming and about failure. And we talk about that a lot with startups and entrepreneurs, is the fact that you have to have the opportunity to fail, and not just fail once, twice, three times, maybe a dozen times, maybe two dozen times, and not fail like your company's going to go down.
Baby. I've got that.
That part. But
we got this scar.
What I wonder too
about
MHTA being a catalyst for bringing together these disparate groups, because it's fun, and this is not a focus group of one, but I sat with my son and his buddies while they were playing their games, and I was asking them about how they go through the different levels and how they fail and get killed and start over and do all that. The whole time they have the mission in mind, the strategy overall, but they've got to fail and fail and fail in all these levels to be able to get up to winning the game.
Yeah.
And that then all the game theorists were looking at, or I should say educators, we're looking at game theory as a way of doing. So I'm just, you know, I think about things like that too. That even in the stuff that we do, or MHTA, you know, gaming companies are not part of the equation. Mm-hmm. Even though Mech was started here, and Sophia isn't really gaming, but there aren't the educational games and. So I'm curious about that as a space.
Yeah, it's on my radar because I have a very specific idea that we're working on, and that is to do a relationship map using system dynamics theory to look at everything that's going on STEM education in the state and how are we going to get to the increased 188,000 people in the workforce by 2018 that are needed out of the Georgetown study. And so when you look at that's minus healthcare, by the way, 188,000. So what's an accelerator on the system in terms of learning? What's a drag? What do we need to let go of? What do we need to do more of? Now, the end use of this data, you know, that's pretty uninteresting to most people. I think it's kind of cool, but a lot of people probably would not find that all that cool. One idea for doing this is to create a game that policymakers might be able to play, and they can move some different variables around and see what happens. Do we get more STEM workers if we do that or less? What happens? For teachers to play as well. So I like this frontier of how do we incorporate games and learning games into what we're doing. And they have to be dynamic. They have to, you know, but that's a space that frankly, we have a lot of opportunity in, I think. I think we also have a lot of opportunity in robotics as well, I have to say. I think that there's no one in the country who's really claimed the robotics, like Robotics Alley, that for lack of a better term. Yeah, I think we need something better. But, you know, there's nobody out there that's done that either. And so I think there's some different ways that maybe we can put our twist on gaming. We can put our twist on using games for learning, using games for decision-making, policy decision-making. I think those are exciting opportunities.
I have a question, and I will ask it on behalf of the startup community, which I'm closest to. And but first, I wanted to say something. I also wanted to ask you another question about Outstate. We were just at a tremendous event up at St. Cloud State, the mini demo event. Three of us made it up there, and amazing community up there. And I want to hear your thoughts about what MHTA will do in Outstate areas and what's going on in St. Cloud, Duluth, Mankato. But my bigger question is, tell us about the makeup of the membership of MHTA, and is there a move afoot to try to draw in the startup community more?
Absolutely. The board has a real desire to figure out a better mechanism for having what you would say the entrepreneurial company in the mix of the board members, represented at the table that is the MHTA board. And so as part of the strategic planning process, we'll be going through some governance reform too. And I'm excited about that. I think it'll be a really good opportunity. And we're also looking at some of the existing programming that we do today and whether some of that programming maybe is a little bit outdated and should maybe, you know, we say thank you to it. We really enjoyed that. But we can create something new that's a little more dynamic. I've met with Jumpstart. They have Jumpstart nationally is working with the city of St. Paul and Minneapolis on an entrepreneurial accelerator. I think we have something to do with that too, because we have people who want to help mentor. We have people who've been through this cycle, who've experienced failure, and being able to share those sorts of experiences in a constructive way, in a safe place, that are going to help those companies be able to grow and move. I take very seriously the Minnesota High Tech Association. It's one of the things I said when I came in and interviewed with MHTA. I think we need to do a better job of reaching out. I'm really happy to say that we've had some success already with that. Red Wing Shoes has just joined. Their customer outreach and their business model is really based on a heavy IT invest, and they are very, you know, interested in how they interact with someone like MHTA. I've been down to Mankato a couple of times. That's my hometown. So it's really to go down and, you know, visit with the engineering school down at Minnesota State Mankato and the cool things they're doing on renewables and energy and trying to bring that in more. Rochester, St. Cloud, we visited with the folks at W3I and they're terrific. And there's actually really a nice emerging community up there, Duluth. And so what I think this what has to happen there to make that successful, I think it's one place where I have unique expertise, having been able to have experiences with people from all around the state, is that you need to find ways to build that community when people are outside of the 7 or 13 county metro area. They need to be able to feel connected and included and maybe create their own clusters regionally of the companies that are part of MHTA. And, you know, we really can grow quite a nice, I think, beyond just the state, almost a regional aspect of this. Western Wisconsin, you know, the Dakotas, the edge of Dakotas. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Sure, that's where all the money is.
Well, and one of the first stories that I ever wrote from Innovate back in, it was almost 3 years ago now, over 3 years ago.
You did it on a typewriter. It was that long ago.
Wow.
That's right.
I was wondering if I can find my typewriter the other day.
I have a museum down my basement.
Do you?
was on a guy named Darren Cotter, Cotter Webb. And the story was he grew up in Fairmont, and he went to Mankato State. And he said, yeah, while everyone was out partying Friday and Saturday night, I was in my dorm room because nobody was on the internet. And he was building things on servers on the net. And he built several businesses, and now Cotter Webb, last I learned was, I don't know, 15 million, 13 million.
Like a weed.
And in Mendota Heights. Kind of a stealth company, don't hear a lot about. He's not into promotion. But I love that story because of my love of everyone having broadband and having great access to technology. But a story of a young guy who was on a dial-up modem in Fairmont who came to Mankato, broadband, and look what he did. And it's just, it's you know, having access and having those kinds of openings.
And having it be affordable.
And I mean, it'll be affordable.
You know, we visited a company a little bit south of Duluth, about 50 miles south of Duluth. They're a large, their company's model is based on large aggregation of data that comes out of healthcare companies. And they do a lot of cost savings for those companies, but they're rural. I mean, there's nothing, you drive into this town and they are the thing going on in the town, okay? They're the largest employer, they have on-site daycare, they cook lunch for their employees, it's kind of amazing. But do you know how much they pay for their 40 megs a month? $2,000.
Oh my God.
And, you know, that's an entire another person for them. You know, they could grow, but they are constrained by that. And they're like, you know, we know it'd be easier if we just came to the cities and did this, but we don't want to come. We want to be here. We want to be in our community. And so I think sometimes we forget a little bit that last mile, that last 2 miles, it's not just the access, it's also the affordability question. Because that same amount would cost them probably about $55 or $60 in the Twin Cities. And so we need to be aware of that, because if the promise of what we say, which is you can work from anywhere in Minnesota, and a lot of people would love to work from anywhere in Minnesota because it's a beautiful state that has a lot of assets to it, then we've got to be serious about making sure that people have affordable access and businesses have affordable access.
Where do you see the role of the association in infrastructure?
Yeah, well, I think we have been in some very active conversations with the Department of Economic Development, as well as Kathy Thunheim, who's the governor's senior person on job creation, and the work that she's doing right now, both making them aware of real companies that are out there that have these sorts of challenges. So part of it's awareness, raising the awareness of the policymakers to realize, okay, we're not done yet with this. We need to keep working on this. Pushing forward the recommendations out of the Ultra High Speed Broadband Task Force from a couple of years ago. Keeping vigilant about the reports that come out about that. The third thing is, I think, we need to have the very serious conversation about what level, if in the 1950s, the Eisenhower Highway was the vision to the future, which it was. I mean, just think about how it opened up the country, what it did, not just for commerce, but also for leisure and for mobility, then we have to think about that in terms of the backbone that we need to do our work. And maybe there needs to be a bigger investment in that by the state of Minnesota.
You know what? Now I can say
what
she had me at Interstate Highway. that's my favorite analogy. Seriously, my grandpa worked for the Great Northern for 44 years, and more of these guys have heard this before. No, but I remember him telling me about the change that happened when the Interstate Highway system came in. Shut up, you guys.
Listen, I want to ask you. We've heard Governor Dayton alluded to it today, Senator Klobuchar had an actual gathering at the university to talk about spurring innovation in the state, and both kind of referenced this legislation, this package of legislation to spur innovation. And I endeavored to secure some information on, okay, what is that package? Mm-hmm. Are you aware of what the individual package is that we're talking about, or what would fall under that, the auspices? Because I'm all about, we all agree that we need to spur innovation, and but is it more than just a buzzword right now? Is there actual legislation that is pending, that is in development?
I believe there is. And so I think there are elements of it. Now, let's just say this. I think that you can create the scaffolding for innovation to flourish based on policy, based on goals that are set. That is possible. Innovation itself has to come organically out of the community, the things that we're doing here today, the conversations that are happening, because you can't really legislate innovation per se. So I think that the things they're talking about, both at the federal and the state level, increase in the research and development tax credit. that has something to do with it. We do know that that's a jobs-rich tax policy. It means that if you're going to make that investment and get that tax benefit, then you are going to create the job here in Minnesota. Those are the sorts of policies that could be quite effective. Things like the Angel Investor Tax Credit. Mm, yeah, you're not going to get it if you're investing in Wisconsin. You get it if you're investing in Minnesota. Those are the sorts of policies that spur something to happen that may have gone somewhere else. I think on the education front, when we talk about innovation, you know, really we're talking about really cracking that issue of critical thinking skills and the way that we get kids comfortable with failure. We don't want them to give up. We want them to try again. And our society, you know, I think we have a little ways to go on that. You know, how do we, in 150 years ago, you probably kept trying because it was a matter of life or death to be able to survive. Now, we see a lot about, you know, maybe not trying quite as hard. And so can we get that right? I think we can get some pieces of it that are going to help kids understand comfortable with failure, more critical thinking skills, using the platform and tools of science, technology, engineering, and math to do that.
I just have to bring up Kid Blog.
Okay.
Hearing the talk about critical thinking skills. Great little startup that you may not have heard of yet in Minnesota.
All right.
That is all about grade school kids learning how to blog.
Excellent. And it was
started by a teacher, a former IT grad of Minnesota Morris, I think, and who got his teaching degree.
One of the great Minnesota schools.
Yes, and he went back and got his teaching certificate, and he's a third grade teacher in Eden Prairie. And he has a partner who has a day job at Lawson Software, and they built this platform that has taken off like wildfire. They have like 25,000 plus classrooms already.
Cool.
500,000 students. Maybe they're at 50,000 classrooms.
Wow, Kid Blog.
Oh, great. Now we got all kinds of competition.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Well, no. You have talent coming up behind you.
There we go.
That's what we all want.
But this is another one of these organic startups that just sort of happened locally.
Well,
you don't hear much about it yet because these guys still have their day jobs.
Yeah.
Well, and the nice thing about that, too, is the fact that there's a woman at Eden Prairie School, Sally Knabley, who taught both my kids, and she does educational technology coaching of teachers. Mm-hmm. She has a team of, I think, 6 or 7 people. And it was interesting having conversations with her about all the stuff that was happening in new media and so forth, and the discussion around, and hearing her talk about media literacy is no longer just being able to critically think about what's coming at you. It's being able to repackage it and communicate it back out.
Mm-hmm.
So learning audio, video,
blogging.
And you have to be able to understand how to synthesize all that stuff and turn around and communicate it back out.
Yeah.
And when you talked about the skills of tomorrow and communication skills, people are going to have to know, how do I come across when I'm on video Skype?
Right.
How do I sound when I'm on audio?
Right.
I got to know a little bit about lighting.
Yeah.
You got to know a little bit about audio and video and clarity and how to come across and all those sorts of things. And then how do you present data without inserting a bunch of visual noise in your slides, on and on and on. So it's important that this stuff like this is...
Yeah, oh yeah.
I'm going to check it out, Kid Blog.
Oh yeah.
I'm just
worried... I'd love to introduce him to you.
Well, let's do it. I would only be worried that, you know, my kids would have written about either me telling them to pick up their room for the 89th time or something like that, right?
Right.
And not doing it.
And you would just have to remind them, you know, the time you spend writing about it, you could actually pick up
your
room.
Well, I try that.
No, the worst part is having a kid with an iPhone camera. My son, and he takes a picture when he was mad at me, and he said, "Now, Dad, I'm going to tweet this." And I was not in the best best light at that point.
Oh.
Well, listen, we discussed when you first were picked for this position. We talked a lot about what makes an innovative leader.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel makes an innovative leader?
Mm-hmm. I think. There's a few key parts. I'm still learning, so I will say that. But, you know, I think respecting people's autonomy, who you're working with, and realizing that that's an important part of things. always seeking mastery, but also doing that in others as well, that's a value that's important here. And, you know, also being able to be curious. I think that's an important piece of this. You know, how does an innovative leader keep going? Well, you're always curious, always learning. You have a hunger for learning about yourself, about others, about mm-hmm. things. And I think those are some of the key components of that. It's not an exhaustive list, but I think it's really important. And then there's, you know, specific skills and tactics that go with that I think people need to have competency in. You know, one of the things that I'm really enjoying right now is that we have the ACE Leadership Group, which is a group of up-and-coming leaders in companies. And we have a class of 32 this year, and we've revamped the curriculum just a little bit. You know, we focus on three things. One is working in teams, both specific tools that can help teams work better together, but also doing teamwork. The second piece is negotiation and mediation, and how that's a critical core competency for both management and life. And then the fourth thing is leadership training around not just the technical leadership that you need. Oh, we have a problem, there's a technical fix for that, but really adaptive leadership, where you're leading from wherever you are in an organization, and that you're mobilizing people and resources to change the really big things. Some of the things that we're talking about, these are adaptive challenges. These aren't technical problems. We can't just find one solution and that's going to hold. We need to really move people and things, and sometimes hearts and minds, to be able to do those things.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Yeah. This has been great.
Great, thanks. Really, I really enjoyed it.
Before we go, I think we need to compliment.
Oh, absolutely. I was about
because
to.
Because the Wi-Fi is Wi-Fi.
Unbelievable.
Last year we kind of lost the focus of what MHTA tried to accomplish in the conference last year because we couldn't get past the low techiness of it.
I appreciate that.
I think that you've done a great job. Mm-hmm. You know, we're light years ahead.
Thanks.
Where we were last year. It's easy to now focus on really what's important
content.
And what's coming out.
And the streaming piece that I mentioned when we walked in, that was awesome.
Yeah, Implex working with us, ITR group working on the iPhone app. And doing that. You know, there's three things that I saw right away.
The leader who's tweeting.
And I do my own tweets. You know, three things that I saw right away. Partly because I had attended some other conferences. Right as I came in, I attended some other conferences here at the convention center. I noticed that everybody either had to go out to the internet cafe, which I thought was so like 1990s, or you know, buy the access. And so I went to Kathy Marsh, who's our event planner on this, and I said, Kathy, what do we do? And she said, you know, it costs something. I said, I just think it's a baseline for who we are. I mean, you can't have a high-tech conference and not have Wi-Fi. Second, when we met up with Implex, really first about a membership conversation, you know, they said, you know, we would love to come in and do this and work with you on this. And so kind of thinking about this more like TED Talks. So in 2 weeks, we will be able to post every single session online for people. And plus, we've been live streaming today. The idea here is if you share more, you actually have a richer community and you actually are more relevant. Yeah. And so that's a piece of it as well. The third thing we did, which was a simple thing, but somebody stopped me in the hall, we did a little bit of crowdsourcing on the sessions ahead of time to say, you know, what might you be interested in? And that, I think, has worked well today, so that we've gotten the room sizes more right. And it's a little thing, but man, people are more comfortable when they're not like hanging all over each other.
I remember standing on top of each other and spilling out into the hallway.
So I think, you know, and we're looking for that feedback. You know, a couple people have sent me messages on Twitter today. I've just emailed them out to the team that we'll go back, and when we do the debrief of the event here in about a week or so, we'll be able to look at ourselves, you know, hopefully with a 360 look at how we're doing on these sorts of events.
Well, and just so you know, because this happened at O'Reilly's conferences like Web 2.0 and others, you have Wi-Fi, people now expect it. And they're going to walk in next time, and they're going to say, well, where are the plugs in the floor?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
They want power strips under
every
floor.
Just have to have a quarter and open up the floor pockets. Come on. Give me a break. Would you be a little innovative, for God's sake?
Thank you.
So, last question.
Hack it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
He just
hack
told us
the power.
So what kind of personal tech do you use?
What kind of personal tech do I use?
You mentioned tweet, you do your own tweets. Do you do it on an iPhone? Do you have a BlackBerry?
I pretty much, I'd break every BlackBerry about every 6 months. I don't know what it was. So I'd kind of kill them. And so I switched over to the iPhone on the second version of it, and I've never looked back. I have an iPad. That's my main way of working in terms of, and then we also have desktops at work that are IBM based and Microsoft product loaded on them, which we work in, and that's quite helpful. And then at home with the kids, we're on Macs. And you know, I use a couple different products to tweet. I have the Twitter normal app, and I usually read on that. I like TweetDeck still for actually doing the retweets and the modified tweets and being able to get in there and actually edit and things. So I love, my daughter accuses me of being gadget girl, so I will tell you. I have my new step counter that's the Kinect technology where it's just measuring every movement I'm doing. I love it. It's a great thing. I walk within 15 feet. It's Fitbit. And if you walk in 15 feet of your computer hooked to the thing, it uploads the data. It's a really cool product. And, you know, so she rolls her eyes. You know, you are a gadget girl, Mom. And I'm like, thanks.
Are you familiar with the term freemium?
No, I'm sorry. That's an inside joke.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you so much for carving out the time.
All right, thanks so much, you guys.
It was great.
All right.